This week on the Country Music Media Podcast.
A lot of variations of the traditional album in 2021 so far. A lot of EPs. Eric Church released sort of a three-headed monster. Morgan Wallen had an opus. Carrie Underwood had a gospel album. Miranda Lambert is more or less releasing demos. It's a cool experience, but if I'm being honest, I kind of like the old way. Welcome to the Country Music Media Podcast. I'm Billy Dukes. Find me on Twitter at Billy Dukes or on Instagram at Serious Journalist. If you're a longtime listener, thank you for returning. I appreciate all the shares and the conversation on social media. You know I return them. New listeners are those who just found the podcast after Monday's episode with Tyler Mahan Co. Thanks for sticking around. Thursday we do news and commentary, and follow the podcast on your favorite platform. Give it a rating. I recently got my first one-star rating. I'm really excited about it. I mean, if I'm not upsetting a few people, what am I really doing here, right? Coming up today, the fine line between news making and rewriting history, and the path forward for Tyler Mahan Co. But first, this week's news, and it was a lot of tour announcements, wasn't it? Old Dominion, Brad Paisley, Brandi Clark, all of these artists announced tours for this summer or fall. In some cases, artists are trying to announce rescheduled dates as a new tour. Okay, whatever, I guess. If you're curious, Dylan Scott ended up being the big winner after Morgan Wallen had to pull off the road this year. Morgan Wallen was scheduled to be on Luke Bryan's tour when it opened up. With him gone, Dylan Scott got that spot. That's a big score for Dylan Scott. Miranda Lambert has a sparse new album this week. The Marfa Tapes with John Randall and Jack Ingram comes out on Friday. I've spent a lot of time with this record, and my one-word review of Miranda Lambert's wild card? Fragile. Fragile. Some of the songs, I can't quit. Like a song called I Don't Like It, and there's another one that's called Ghost that is really special. Those are the spotlight tracks for me. Here's something pretty interesting, though, about Miranda's album, and I think it shows how Nashville works, and how in Nashville you just don't give a damn. John Randall, who is one-third of this trio, he's a good friend of Miranda Lambert's. He's married to songwriter Jesse Alexander, who continues to write many of Blake Shelton's spiritual songs. He's done it for years. Savior's Shadow is a Jesse Alexander song. I mean, there's a few more. You know, I feel like in any other walk of life, this kind of thing would be an issue. But in country music, the song wins. It's cool. A lot of variations of the traditional album in 2021 so far. A lot of EPs. Eric Church released sort of a three-headed monster. Morgan Wallen had an opus. Carrie Underwood had a gospel album. Miranda Lambert is more or less releasing demos. I mean, it's a cool experience. But if I'm being honest, I kind of like the old way. I'm ready for like a 10 to 13 song fully produced album again. I miss that. Lainey Wilson might have the album of 2021 for me. Saying What I'm Thinking released a little bit earlier this year. That's a special album. Miranda's is good, though. She might win some hardware for it. I could very easily see her winning maybe a CMA or a Grammy, at least being nominated for one of those. There's not going to be a single off the album, though, that's for sure. It's sort of a cool side project, maybe something, a stopgap before we get to her next album. And honestly, it's a really easy payday for her. Midland is touring this year. Gabby Barrett has 9 nominations for the 2021 Billboard Music Awards. Morgan Wallen is a finalist as well, but he's being excluded from the show. That's in line with Dick Clark Productions' stance on all of this. They produced the ACM Awards in April, too, and banned them for that. I don't know if he could be at the BBMAs 1 month later. That'd be strange, you know. The difference, of course, is how these awards, the Billboard Awards, are earned, not voted on. Like, if the math works in his favor, you gotta give Morgan Wallen that award. The way they announced it, though, I mean, it felt at first to me a little bit cancel-y, but then I conferred with some of my coworkers, and I think that I just concluded that Dick Clark Productions probably just, maybe they didn't need to say anything. I didn't think they handled the announcement all that well. They sort of shoehorned it in right before the nominations and the finalists were announced. Morgan himself, though, he might not have been ready to show up, even if they would have invited them. He seems to, in some hand, understand that there's steps he has to take, and one of those, I think, is a significant interview with someone on television. Then he can go celebrate. Can't skip the steps. On Monday, Tyler Mahan Coe joined me, and I mentioned that he was a really important guest for me, and even to an extent inspired this podcast. And that's true. It really was important for several reasons. The first is that I, like Tyler, prefer a podcast with some organization or even a script. You know, that shows some curation, which shows that the host cares. This show is pretty well manicured. And if it doesn't sound like it, I'll take that as a compliment. I'm pretty critical of interview podcasts. I don't like them. There's just so many of them, especially celebrities interviewing other celebrities. And in country music, interviews are pretty cheap. It's not hard to get a known talent on your podcast. But also, I hear a lot of hosts sort of bouncing around in interviews, diving into the romantic life, this sort of anything-goes wacky philosophy when it comes to a podcast. I don't think that sells long-term, and it certainly doesn't differentiate you from anybody else doing the same thing. You know, I built this to be a place for storytellers, but not of the songwriting and singing kind. You know, I wanted my people, people who tell the stories of other artists. You get that honesty and that kind of perspective that I think is pretty rare. I think I've been rightly critical as needed here in this space, and I'm going to continue to do that. And that leads me to what Tyler said about music criticism.
Music criticism largely no longer exists. It's very, yes, very difficult to find even a middling review on any new product because it doesn't get written. The only things that get written are positive things. And there are very few exceptions. Sometimes some album will come out and for some reason everyone decides this one's okay to dogpile on. Like one of those Jack White albums that recently came out. Everyone was like, okay, we're going to shit on this one. Right? Right. All right, yeah, let's do it. But
I talk about this all the time.
Yeah, that almost never happens. And I think a lot of people would say that that's good, but it's not good. It's not good for anyone, you know, because it's the same concept as someone getting rich and or famous and surrounding themselves with yes men all the time. You can't do that. You need someone who's around who's going to be like, this isn't good. What are you doing? This is not good. And that literally does not exist anymore, and it's very easy to see how this situation arose. Obviously, social media, PR, public relations, that used to mean you had to go through the press in order to communicate to the public. That was how it used to work, and now it doesn't work that way anymore. Now, every artist has their own audience that's just following them, so I don't need to do a press junket. I like to because I like talking to journalists, and I like having conversations because it's stimulating to the intellect, in my opinion, and I think people do want this stuff. I think people do want to see this interaction between creator and journalist, but most people, it's way too dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. He's absolutely right. There is no incentive to harshly criticize an album because so few people read them nowadays. You know, I think you can write an essay on albums. That's really what Grady Smith does so well. Even the word review is a turnoff in a headline or in a piece of editorial. Calling it an essay sounds a lot smarter. It's deeper. It's a little bit more objective. It seems less bloggy or less trolly. I mean, if you're a fan, you can kind of gush and do so artfully. But why waste time on a pan? I mean, there's just so many more productive things you can do with your journalist time. There is an art to a good pan, and it is kind of enjoyable to do when it's done well. But I think it's going to be like teaching Latin. There's just no audience. I mean, social media is literally a hornet's nest of toxic opinions. How is your scaled back opinion in 500 to 1,000 words going to cut through a great tweet? It can't. Couple more takeaways from that conversation with Tyler Mahan Coe. One is, it's clear he has a real soft spot for Wynonna, and I wish I had a little bit more time to explore that with him. Second, Tyler says he's not going to sell out. You know, he's not going to partner with a podcast production company like a Gimlet or someone similar. I guess that's admirable. You know, he says he could be a millionaire right now if he had sold after season one. And it's great that he wants to keep his proprietary rights, but dude, throw a few more ads on there, man. You gotta make some money. I hear like one an episode, and it's for the podcast service that he uses. You don't have to get rich, but make a paycheck. Yeah. You know, toss those ads all over that first season, too. 2 to 3 ad breaks across an hour-long podcast. That's perfectly fine. You know, there's no joy or any kind of reward in just suffering for the sake of suffering. You know? He says he makes about $1,000 a month from Patreon. I think he should be making about 6 figures off this show this year, if only so that he can bank some money and go research and cut season 3 a little bit sooner. So my advice to Tyler, not that he's asking, would be to first get some more advertisers. And I know he could. But think about beginning a podcast network. You're the boss. Your show would be the flagship show. Bring 3 to 6 other shows under his banner and sell them. I think that'd be the smart play here for him. You know, Cocaine and Rhinestones, really, really popular, has sort of a very focused audience. It's unusual, though, and you know, it might not appeal to like a network with fans of other kinds of podcasts. He could build what he does into sort of this like-minded multi-million-dollar enterprise over the next few years. I was just so impressed by his memory, though, you know, and the way he talked, and his attention to detail, the way he spoke of modern journalists really, really hit home, because this absolutely happens in the 21st century. I almost did it last week. An old story with old facts gets retold, and one of two things happen. New information that was discovered afterward isn't applied, or that old story becomes like a game of telephone, and the details change. Recently, we did a trivia video on Faith Hill. We wanted to include a story that Faith, when she was a teenager, competed in a tobacco spitting contest. That was the story that was kind of rattling along in some fairly legitimate publications. I mean, people shared it. It might have even been from an old people story from a couple of decades ago. But does that make sense? Faith Hill, spitting tobacco? Because the story also goes on to say that she took the stage after and they had to kind of clean it up, get all that tobacco. That makes more sense, that maybe she just performed afterward, but the story had her competing. I had her winning. I had started to write that she won tobacco spitting contest before I kind of looked up and thought, that doesn't seem on brand for Faith Hill. And it's possible that way back when, Taste of Country, and my writing was the one who said that she competed in it. Maybe I got it a little wrong. I could be responsible for this echo chamber. You know, that's a real danger in this profession. So big thanks to Tyler Mahan Co. for bringing up that point. Make sure you check out episode 55. And if you're into podcasting, I thought the way he explained fair use and how and when to use music in a podcast was really essential. You can skip right to the 55-minute mark of that episode to hear just that section. I won't mind. By the Numbers this week finds Morgan Wallen with the number one country album. Eric Church's Soul is 2. And the And album is number 12. Heart from Eric Church falls from 3 to 10. Digital sales, it's L. King and Miranda Lambert's Drunk, followed by The Good Ones by Gabby Barrett, and Matt Cooper, Ain't Met Us Yet. Forever After All by Luke Combs is the most streamed song, followed by The Good Ones and Hell of a View by Eric Church. Fill Them Boots by Chris Lane is the most added song in country radio. Made for You by Jake Owen is the number one airplay song. And the number one hot country song belongs to Gabby Barrett. Make it 4 weeks now for The Good Ones. Big thanks to Billboard for the charts, Taste of Country for the job, and to whoever it was that gave me that 1-star rating on Apple Podcasts. I'm toying with a couple of new ideas coming up, looking for your feedback, including a I Knew Him When segment, and then another one that's loosely called Settle Your Country Score. I try to settle your country music arguments. Feedback on Twitter at Billy Dukes, Instagram at Serious Journalist. You can also email me anytime, BillyDukes@gmail.com. On Monday, it's the Q2 stock report. I'm set to do this thing. Are we buying Miranda Lambert stock? Should you sell Gabby Barrett stock now that she's peaked? Find out on Monday during episode 57 of the Country Music Media Podcast.